You may have recently read that our former president, Jimmy Carter, recently passed a milestone. I don't mean his age, even though a couple of weeks ago he turned 94. No, I mean his Sunday school milestone. You see, a couple of months ago, he taught his 800th Sunday school class. That's right. Jimmy Carter continues to teach Sunday school at his small local Maranatha Baptist Church in Plains, Georgia. Every other week, in fact. For over 30 years now. He teaches the scriptures to the people of Plains and the people of Canada or Kenya or China or Denmark, whoever happens to show up. This is the former president of the United States, who at one point in his life, in the late 70s, was arguably the most powerful person in the world. He and Rosalind live in the same small town that they grew up in, where they met. And every other Sunday morning, the 2002 Nobel Peace Prize winner walks people through the scriptures. I suppose that this caught my attention because it is a clear sign of the kind of greatness that Jimmy Carter embodies. And, well, because it seems to cut against the grain. Because the greatness you see in Jimmy Carter has nothing to do with power or money. They still live in the modest house, two bedrooms, that they bought 50 years ago. It was recently assessed at $167,000. Jimmy Carter never gave top dollar speeches like every other president who followed him, a practice that his predecessor and good friend, Gerald Ford, began. His presidential center in Atlanta costs a small fraction to the American taxpayer, a small fraction of every other living president's center. In fact, they just splurged recently and put in a Murphy bed so that he and Rosalind could have a place to sleep when they were there. Now, the greatness that inspires me about Jimmy Carter comes from what he gives away, not from what he holds on to. He gives of himself, his time, his money, his ideas, his energy, his passion. Jimmy Carter gives himself away so that anyone and everyone can be set free. I find it really easy to be irritated and maybe even angry with James and John this morning. I mean, who leads with, "Teacher, give us whatever we ask of you"? Who does that? I mean, you know, who does that who's older than, say, six? I get that, but like, really? And to make this even more ridiculous, what we didn't hear that takes place right before this week's gospel passage is that before they make this request of Jesus, he has just predicted the way that he's going to be killed again. This is actually the third time now in this gospel account that Jesus has told his students how he's going to die. And each time he does it, they just don't get it. It's a pattern in this gospel. Each time Jesus tells the disciples what's going to happen, and each time they colossally misinterpret it, and each time he has to draw them aside to let them know what this is going to mean. And this week is no different, except for one thing. And again, this is between what we heard last week in the gospel and what we just heard this morning. You see, just before Jesus tells his followers about his death, the gospel tells us that his disciples were amazed and afraid. Amazed and afraid. It's incredible about how those two feelings can come together. Amazed and afraid, and then Jesus tells them these awful things that will happen. And so this is when I got a little more compassion for James and for John. When they make this request of Jesus, can we sit at your right hand and your left hand in your glory? Why would they make a request like this? Maybe they don't want to believe that what Jesus is predicting is actually going to happen. Or maybe they believe and are wanting to ride alongside Jesus when he comes to conquer Jerusalem. Either way, it seems to me that James and John are afraid. And like many of us, when it comes to fear, their response is to grasp at whatever is close at hand and hold it tight. At least that's what I might do. If I was afraid of not having enough safety, enough security, enough control of the situation, enough protection for the people I love, you know, enough. The challenge with enough is knowing when enough is enough. But I might do just the same thing. Actually, check that. When I am feeling stressed or lost or out of my depth or wanting, when I am in the grip of the shadow, that is exactly what I do. What I believe many of us do, we hold tighter and we grasp for more. I suppose that's part of what makes the witness of Jimmy Carter so compelling, that he knows what he needs. Yes, he needs shelter and food and a safe environment, but he could so easily grasp for more. With the prestige he has and the power and the authority. And yet, because he follows the path of Jesus the Christ, he chooses to give it away so that many, many others may be set free. Because paradoxically, that's where this service, this bondage that Jesus is talking about, that's where it's headed. We take on this servanthood and this bondage so that we and others may be set free. It's pointing to liberation, to freedom, but it's hard at first to see or to hear. I hear it in this last verse of this passage. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. To give his life as a ransom for many. Now, you may be like me. When I hear the word ransom, I think about, you know, a note with cut-up letters from the newspaper that says, you know, leave the $1,000 in a brown paper bag by the fountain in the town square or Fido gets it. You know, that's what I think about. But that's actually not what Jesus is talking about. Ransom in the Greek of his era had more to do with liberative acts than it did an amount of money. As in, the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give himself so that many could be set free. Give himself so that many could be set free. Do you want to live counter to this culture? Give your life away so that others may be set free. Give away money, not just here, but to many people and many places. Give away privilege to those who struggle to be seen and heard. Give away attention to those who are starved for it. Give away power to those who are denied it. I say this would be living counter to our culture, and I believe it to be true, but in fact, I think this is probably counter to most human culture. It's why the saints of the church, be they Perpetua and Felicity, Agnes and Antony, Claire and Francis, Teresa, and thanks be to God, Oscar Romero. It's why they were so loved and feared as they lived. Because their generative acts of liberative love were subversive to the imperial powers who rely on scarcity and fear to maintain their grip. That's why I care so much about giving. Not simply to this parish. No, in as many ways to as many people as we can. What is really important to me as a guide in this community is that we give ourselves away. With acts of sacrifice, sacrifice by giving something of great value for something of even greater value. I can tell you firsthand what this kind of generative freedom feels like. For 15 years now, Sarah and I have tithed. We've given away 10% of what we have earned, at least. And I can candidly say that at the beginning, it was a bit frightening. We didn't know how all the bills were going to be met. Food, rent, student loans. But over time, as we began to trust in the practice, that grip of fear began slowly to loosen, gift by gift and act by act. It's not over. In this culture, I don't know that it ever is. But it is loosening. As Christians, we give because it's how we take part in God's action of setting people free. It's how we follow Jesus in the reparation of this world. What's funny, though, is that when we give our lives away, that freedom actually starts here, in our own hearts. All too often, friends, we think of greatness as simply the people who hold the power, who have the money, who have the prestige. And then we come to days like today. We see again that in the commonwealth of Christ, true greatness is found in those who give it away.